Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Face Connecticut on WTIC News Talk 1080, 96.5 TICFM and Light 100.5 WRCH. Aaron Kupek with you this Sunday morning, and we are pleased to be joined by Rich Hanley, Associate Professor of Journalism at Quinnipiac University in Hamden. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Aaron. Good to talk to you.
We are recording the program remotely. A lot of folks working remotely these days. First of all, Professor, what do you think of how journalists are covering the coronavirus?
I think journalists have done an outstanding job at presenting measured coverage without stoking panic, that sort of thing. They're operating under extreme conditions. Social distancing requires that they maintain a distance between themselves and the folks they're interviewing. They also have to parse a lot of disinformation that's flowing through social media and determine what's accurate and what's not, you know, in terms of treatment and so on. Pandemics such as this one are complicated things, and they have to present to the public a simple version of it without losing the complexity of it. And I think they're doing a pretty good job of that as best as they can, you know, while practicing social distancing and while maintaining safe themselves. One of the difficulties of this story is that the journalism, the news, is actually taking place inside hospital emergency departments. And you can't just walk in there with a camera crew, or you can't walk in there with a pad and observe what's going on and talk to doctors in real time. So there seems to be an antiseptic quality to some of the coverage because it's difficult to get for television folks, video of the emergency departments, and it's difficult for textual journalists to get solid descriptions of what's actually happening in these emergency departments because they don't have access to it.
Now, in the early days of the virus, there was a lot of criticism of the news media that this was being overblown. Do you see that shifting now that it's been declared an official pandemic?
Well, no, I think people are still complaining about the coverage. There's still a lot of disinformation flowing through social medias that this is no worse than the seasonal flu, which is untrue. There's still a lot of posts about it's a hoax, which is untrue. So there's still a lot of criticism leveled at the media, you know, driven in part by the political polarization of our time. But journalists seem to be doing a fair job of covering it. There was early contextual issues when the virus first started to seep into American consciousness. And that came in, what do you compare it to? And so the seasonal flu was used as a measuring mark. Well, X amount of people die each year because of the seasonal flu. X amount of people have died because of COVID-19. And that sort of gave an impression that it wasn't as horrific as the seasonal flu. And that was not the case. But I do see those contextual comparisons beginning to fall by the wayside as, tragically, the bodies stack up in hospital morgues throughout the United States.
To that point, the seasonal flu has been around for a long time. There's a vaccine for it. And when there's something new that emerges, the media is more likely to gravitate toward that, correct?
Absolutely. They're not going to cover the seasonal flu except in October, getting video of the annual flu shot or stories about annual flu shots being made available, that sort of thing, you know, and announcements that people should get the flu shot. And then, of course, they'll do the story anti-vaxxers, pro-vaxxers. They'll have to cover that story during the annual seasonal flu shot season. But this is a different this is different altogether. The seasonal flu is drawn out over months. This is coming at us all at one time, which is causing the crisis in emergency departments and the crisis of a lack of supplies and so on. So journalists are focused on the crisis at hand, something that we don't necessarily see every year with a seasonal flu.
Now, recently, President Trump has been front and center at daily briefings on the coronavirus. And a lot of people are beginning to question whether or not it's useful for networks to cover these events wall to wall. Do you think that is a justified question to ask?
That is a legitimate question because these briefings have turned into some sort of political rally. at this point, journalists are looking for hard information that they can make actionable in their stories. They don't need to be quoting the president, making untoward remarks toward reporters or making untoward remarks toward other senators. They need information so they can get that information out to the public. I think the nation would be better served. I think the president would be better served if he let the experts dominate that press conference so actionable information can be transmitted efficiently at the 6 o'clock hour to the audience, which really needs that information for a sense of what is happening outside their homes.
How would you compare the briefings that we've seen from the White House and the briefings that we are getting at the state level from Governor Lamont and other officials?
Oh, they're completely different. I don't mean to be flippant, but it's a pandemic, but all pandemics are local in the sense that they affect us as individuals. And I think the press conferences by the governors in our area, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts, tend to be more detail driven because they want that information out to their neighbors immediately. So there's little bombast. There's very little finger pointing, that sort of thing. There's just a lot of information flowing. I think Governor Cuomo in New York has done a great job in terms of providing information, not in terms of a performance. I think Governor Lamont is doing the best he can to get information out and making himself accessible to individual reporters as well as to press conferences. So I think by and large, the local or statewide reaction has been more efficient and more informative than the national reaction, simply because the governors know their neighbors, they know their states, and they know they don't want to start any undue panic. They know they don't want to start making political accusations at this time.
We've also seen a huge shift very drastically in the way our leaders communicate with not only the citizens, but also the media.
Oh, yeah. It's a different world now, and everyone's trying to get used to it. The president's trying to get used to it, if not actually driving some of the way stuff is covered. But governors are showing, how that they can stand out front and turn over press conferences to experts. They can speak directly more so to their constituents than before through tools like Skype, Zoom, social media, and all the digital platforms available to them beyond traditional television and newspapers.
At the local level, we've seen some interesting things, too. They had a drive-through town meeting this past week in Vernon. Local meetings are closed to the public, at least in person, but a lot of cities and towns have been going online and using social media and cable access. And this is all thanks to one of the executive orders from the governor, kind of loosening FOI requirements for cities and towns. Do you think municipalities might be reluctant to give some of that back when this is over?
No, I think governors, mayors, selectmen, alders, I think folks understand the severity of the crisis and understand that certain protocols need to be suspended, but only for, as they would say in World War II, the duration. I don't think there's going to be any lasting impact on freedom of information because of this crisis. I think this is an all hands on deck. How can we get information out to people as efficiently and quickly as possible because lives are at stake? I think when we go out on the other side of this crisis, that sort of FOI wink and a nod will go away, and the rule of law and FOI regulations will be followed.
Now, in terms of how journalists are covering the pandemic, we've seen a lot of innovative methods on their part as well, and including broadcasting from their living room using a microphone that you might use for personal use as opposed to broadcasting on a TV station. They're having to kind of make it up as they go.
Yeah, they are. And, the production values certainly are not the same, but there's a certain quality to the amateur level of production that amplifies the underlying crisis. You know, it's like, you know, here we are reporting live from our living rooms because we can't be in the studio. So the sort of grainy video gives an authenticity to the coverage, and we're all in this together attitude that I think the audience appreciates. Now, they're not going to say all those production values aren't as good as they are in the studio. I don't think they're saying that. But I do think at some level they understand, you know, that journalists are trying their best under extreme conditions to tell stories about this crisis and are using all the tools available while maintaining social distancing. So I think there is a certain realistic quality to this coverage that, in fact, enhances it. Because it, at one level, is showing the severity of the crisis, and at another level, showing that journalists are you know, living off the land, trying to figure out the best way to tell a story. And that gives their storytelling a level of credibility that sharp and flashy production values tend to mitigate. Yeah.
Especially in broadcasting, typically, most of the people are going to show up at the radio station, at the TV station, to perform their jobs. And this has thrown that, you know, for a total loop. When it is over, do you see maybe more broadcasters telecommuting than did before?
I think we will see that for two reasons. One, it works, as the coverage of the pandemic is showing. And two, it's cheaper than maintaining all hands on deck studio crews and whatnot. I think on the other side of this, that, you know, media will change in terms of the economics of it, and they'll find that, you know, the audience likes the authentic presentation of news as it's being presented in this pandemic. They don't necessarily want to return, you know, to the slick, you know, driven sort of coverage they're getting on TV. I think news directors are looking very closely at how they can take advantage of the lessons they're learning and apply those lessons in terms of their coverage. They can go to more places. They can get to more detail because of the equipment. It's light. It's certainly able to be transmitted via the internet. I think they'll look at that end and take advantage of it when we get out on the other side. And I think news will be better off for it.
You're listening to Face Connecticut. We are talking to Rich Hanley, Associate Professor of Journalism at Quinnipiac University in Hamden. Expand on that last thought. Does journalism emerge stronger or weaker after the pandemic?
I think it's going to, unfortunately, be somewhat weaker because of the economic situation. There are some newspapers, for example, that may not survive the pandemic because advertising has evaporated. And they were already teetering on the edge. So I do think there will be some newspapers that will fold because of this. There's no revenue. On the other hand, I think a generation of journalists is learning the craft at a level that you cannot teach in college. They have to learn how to tell stories remotely. They have to learn how to interview people without being in the same room. They have to learn how to use video conferencing tools to present those stories. They have to learn how to write in an information-saturated environment and determine what information is credible and not in real time. So I think the profession of journalism will be vastly improved because of this crisis, but the distribution of it may unfortunately be different, particularly for traditional newspapers.
And with that in mind, a lot of newspapers have, in fact, taken down their paywalls for coronavirus coverage so their readers can get the latest and best information.
Right. Well, this goes to the core of the role of news organizations. It's a public service business. It's serving their customers, which are constituents, and more importantly, their citizens. So newspapers and TV organizations, recognizing their public service role, are, you know, bringing down paywalls, losing all that revenue, because in their minds, public service is more important than revenue during a crisis of this nature. I think it's a good thing, and newspapers who have paywalls and who bring those paywalls down are to be commended. for doing so and doing so quickly, because they need to get information out. And the last thing they want to do is get in the way of that information with some paywall, you know, fee and so on. So this is a commendable moment for newspapers, and hopefully the citizens will react to it by subscribing to these newspapers when we get through this.
Just to back up a moment, I know that a lot of TV and radio stations and online outlets do a lot of fine original reporting, but a lot of the time, that story you see on TV at night originated in the morning newspaper. Still.
Well, that's been the way it's, you know, it's been since the emergence of television. You know, it's what's in the New York Times? Well, that's what we're going to cover. You know, what's in the Hartford Courant? What's in the New England Register? What's in the Record Journal in Meriden? What's in the Journal Inquirer? Well, that's what we're going to cover, because you know, local newspapers have boots on the ground in all these communities, very thorough coverage of these communities. And, you know, and as a result, you know, papers like the Waterbury Republican, American, they're setting the agenda for what the television news organizations cover, because they have more reporters. And they're obviously hyper-local to their communities, and they can reveal news that TV news organizations simply don't have the personnel to do. So I would hope that newspapers get out of this intact, because if some don't, it will affect what's covered at the television level. And local TV news is very important, and always will be very important, you know, in a regional sense, to give folks who live in Willimantic an idea of what's happening in Torrington, and an idea of what's happening in Bridgeport and Water, you know, in New Haven and whatnot. It gives a wider universe than local newspapers can.
When you have a major event like this, is there a fear that other also important stories are going to fall through the cracks?
Well, it's inevitable that stuff is not going to be covered, because the emphasis is on COVID-19 coverage, as it should be, because of the severity of the outbreak and the consequences of the outbreak. So there may be coverage that's going to be by the wayside or set aside for later on. But right now, all hands are looking at what's going on, what's the municipal reaction, what's the state reaction, what's the national reaction, what are the consequences for people in our community. All the resources are pointed in that direction. It doesn't mean other stuff is not being covered. I think one of the lessons we have here is from the sports pages and the sports newscasts. They have no sports to cover. So what they're doing is finding stuff to cover that otherwise wouldn't be covered. You know, a feature story on an athlete. What are Olympic athletes going to do now that the games have been postponed for a year? How are they reacting to it? Their one chance at glory could disappear because of this. So they're getting more personal, more up close to the lives of people. And I think that's what's happening now. And these stories probably would not have been covered ordinarily.
You mentioned sports, and of course, we're in the backyard of ESPN based in Bristol. How have sports networks adapted to this?
They've basically gone deep into their archives and drawn out some old game footage, old broadcasts and whatnot, and promoting them in unique ways on social media to keep the audience interested in sports. It's they have deep archives. ESPN's got all sorts of stuff. It's 30 for 30 documentaries, so they could run those, and it'll draw an audience because they're so good. You know, NBC is running some of its previous coverage. You know, CBS, you know, throwing some coverage up on their cable network on NCAA tournament games of the past, that sort of thing. So what they're using is the past and trying to relate it to the present and creating a sense of nostalgia about sports that they hope will keep the sports fans engaged. So when the games start again, that there will be an audience ready to watch the games live.
You know, the NCAA tournament, the Olympics, all big money makers for broadcast outlets. Is this going to hurt their bottom line down the road?
It'll hurt their bottom line, but these payments are merely deferred. They're not going to disappear. They will come back to the networks in some way, shape, or form in the future. For example, NBC will broadcast the Olympics, even though it's going to be delayed. There's going to be a hit. Everyone's taking a hit, you know, the bottom line in this environment, in the media. But the networks, they'll be okay. They have plenty of cash flow. Advertisers are not entirely disappearing. The advertisers, in fact, are shaping their messages on television to COVID-19, saying we're all in it together. We'll defer payments. You take 3 months to make your first payment on a car, for example. So advertisers are still using the networks, including the sports networks, to get messages out this time, getting their message about COVID-19 out and how they're willing to work with customers.
As an academic, how have things changed for you and your students?
Well, we're all online. Quinnipiac University has been closed now for a few weeks. All our classes have been moved online. The transition has been interesting, to say the least. It's a new way to teach for many professors. I've taught online for years, so it's really no big deal for me because I know how it works and the techniques and whatnot that apply to online that don't apply to on campus. But it will be interesting to see how the students respond, because right now they're used to on campus classes, and then suddenly they're thrust into an environment that's not as structured. But so far at Quinnipiac University, we've been blessed. Students are doing well. They're participating fully in our video conferences, our discussion boards, and they seem to be adjusting and adapting well. Still have several weeks to go, but we are pleased with the transition. I think a lot of schools are pleased with it, and we're using the technology to maintain our mission, which is to serve our students. And we'll continue to do that with any technology that's available. And we're happy to do it and be available to the students, because they're going through a crisis individually. You know, they thought they were going to be living in dorms. Now they're living at home. There's a lot of anxiety out there and some depression. And faculty need to be sensitive to these conditions and to be available to students who are now removed from our classrooms, just to make sure they're okay.
For students who hope to become journalists, are they excited to get out and cover this pandemic, or are they concerned and more worried about their studies at this point?
Well, I can speak only to our students at Quinnipiac University. We have award-winning news, television and print and online. And those students have been covering the community remotely. You know, they've been doing interviews via Zoom video conferencing, via email, via text messages. They're staying on top of the situation. They're still producing news, even though they may be home in New Jersey or Massachusetts or Connecticut. They're not on our campus. They're still very aggressively pursuing the story at a safe distance, you know, and that sort of thing. We obviously comply with all recommendations to keep students safe. But they're doing a fantastic job at keeping the community informed by maintaining coverage as best as they can, just as professional journalists are doing. And it's quite refreshing to see their sort of can-do attitude that, yeah, we have some obstacles, but we're going to improvise, we're going to overcome, and we're going to make this coverage happen. And they've done a fantastic job. And this will help them greatly when they graduate, because they could say, we went through this and we covered it. We found the way to cover it. So it'll help them.
He is Rich Hanley, Associate Professor of Journalism at Quinnipiac University in Hamden. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Aaron. It's great to see you.
Thanks for listening to Face Connecticut. I'm Aaron Kupek. Enjoy the balance of your weekend.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.